On this exciting entry of Animation Deliberation, podcasters J. Scotty St. Clair and Zuhair Ali are joined by special guest Haley Hobbs to break down the back half of Bad Batch, Star Wars Bad Batch, that's right, episodes 9 through 16. All that right after these unavoidable interruptions to these intergalactic transmissions that we have no control over.
Casting.
Sing along if you know the words. A 1, 2, 3, it's time for Animation Deliberation. A conversation and a celebration of our favorite action animated series. Yeah.
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 I love the participation. Thanks, guys. Well, folks, here we are. Bad Batch has run its course, and we are here to break it down. I'm your host, J. Scotty St. Clair. Welcome back to Animation Deliberation, the podcast that takes action animation and cartoons seriously, but not too seriously. And on today's episode, I am joined by my co-host, Zuhair Ali, as well as a very special guest from our sister podcast, Source Pages, a reading collective known colloquially as Spark, the esteemed Haley Hobbs. Welcome to the show, Haley. How are you?
Good. Hey, fellas. Glad to talk Bad
Batch. Thanks for being here. Yeah, this is exciting.
I'm excited to have a co-host that has seen Rebels and Clone Wars. It's been bounced off of this time.
That burn won't matter because he won't hear it.
Well, that burn applies to me as well.
The podcaster who doesn't listen to podcasts.
Oh, no.
But yours is like outside of the fire. I actually lit him on fire. You just, your clothes just caught a little bit of that.
I got a little singe.
Oh man, I may is gonna make a reference. I forgot what the thing was called. The little engine thing they tried escaping out of when Crosshair was trying to burn him alive.
Oh, the ion engine?
Yeah. Chamber. You were on the outskirts of the ion chamber, but I just threw somebody.
Okay. Well, yeah, a little singe. Thanks for sparing me for the most part there. I guess before we, you know, get too much into the proceedings here, this is a good opportunity since you are our guest, Haley. Why don't you tell us about your experience as a fan of animation and Star Wars animation specifically?
Yeah. I mean, Star Wars animation kind of sums it up because I don't feel like I watched a lot of animation after I was a kid. Of course I say that, and I love animated Disney movies. Like I was obsessed with Raya, and I was messaging Zoo constantly about how obsessed I was with Raya and The Last Dragon. Oh, I loved your cast with Grow about it. So I really just leaned towards those for the most part. And then with Star Wars animation, I was sort of a casual Star Wars fan until The Mandalorian came out. And I, being the trivia-obsessed, behind-the-scenes-obsessed person that I am, was like, what are all these references that they're talking about? And everything was like, the Clone Wars, the Clone Wars, the Clone Wars. So I was like, I guess I'll watch the Clone Wars. And lockdown happened, so I binged it way too fast. And then I made my husband watch it with me. I was like, you have to watch this. And then we both watched Rebels and just super fell in love with Rebels. So that's kind of my Star Wars history in a nutshell. And I've really loved The Bad Batch with one exception this season.
Interesting.
We'll talk about it.
Well, that's awesome to hear. I'm glad to hear that you're so high on the series because this is a podcast that certainly celebrates animation. And with that in mind, we have some brand new Star Wars animation to look forward to. We got the trailer for Star Wars Visions, which looks absolutely amazing. But before we talk about that, we got a new review, which I'm eternally grateful for. Note the Eternals reference there.
Charlie29192 via Apple Podcast says, great show for a conversation on some of the best animation TV shows out there. Recently, I really enjoyed their coverage of Master of the Universe Revelations, from the primer, which is really helpful, to the deep after-show discussion with great guests as well as the top host. I feel that this podcast helped me connect with the wider community about the specific show. I'm looking forward to future casts as I know these guys have so much content to cover. Keep up the great work, Charlie. He's from Great Britain.
Well, thank you, Charlie. I appreciate those kind words. It means the world. If you would like to drop us a review wherever you listen to your podcast, leave us a review. It's immensely helpful to our growth. We're still a new show, and we love hearing from you guys. So thank you very much.
We have one more from this guy named Jay Scott Sinclair. No relationship to Jay Scotty Sinclair.
Sounds like a tool.
He says,
seems real suspect.
I love being a part of such a fun show. Weird, I've never heard of him. The creative outlet and interactions have been awesome. When have we interacted with you? Can't wait to build up the show and make it bigger and better. Yeah, thanks. Keep writing in those reviews.
Oh, well, that's my account. Yeah.
Hey, there's a reason I'm known as J. Scott for real. There are many imposters out there, okay? All right. With the housekeeping out of the way, or some of the housekeeping out of the way, I should say, let's talk about this Star Wars Visions trailer. Zuhair, you kind of already told me before we started the recording, this was your first opportunity to sit down and watch this thing. And you sounded like you're pretty giddy. So go ahead and gush, my man. What do you got?
Dude, all of it looks so good. As you guys know, I've been raving to try to talk about anime a little more often. I've been bugging Jay Scotty every week. Like, watch this show, watch that show. Why didn't you watch this? How would you think of that yet? I love anime. It's fantastic. And the fact that Disney is actually giving these studios just free reign, be like, do whatever you want. Be creative. None of it's going to be canon. Just come up with a good story and make it look beautiful. And they're doing just that. They gave snippets of,
nine unique stories from seven different celebrated studios. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not the person who looks up like which studio did what and which artist did this. I just dwell in what I'm watching. So I'm not the guy to say this person did this, this person did that. But the snippets that they showed all look beautiful. They all look unique in their own way. I was thinking of like different anime that I could like relate it to as I was watching. And I am just so stoked for them to just have this open world freedom of thought. Like, some of them, they actually did like the Japanese voices too. I know some of them did English. They really had all the creative freedom in the world, and I'm really excited to see what they come up with.
Yeah, it looks absolutely incredible. Haley, what are some of your thoughts on this trailer?
So anime is not really my thing, but I watched it. I've watched it twice now. I did think something that stuck out to me, it seems like they have meshed different animation styles in some of the shows. And there was even like the Podracer arena from Phantom Menace looks like it's directly lifted from the movie almost. So that was kind of cool. And I did feel seen because there was finally a blonde girl in Star Wars. So I was into that.
Yeah.
She was near the end. She had really long hair.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was like, oh, that must be me.
Yeah, if I recall correctly, I mean, we got to see a lot in a very short amount of time. I think the trailer's only like a minute and 20 seconds or 23 seconds or something like that. But they showed us quite a bit. And I think what you're alluding to with that blonde character, if I recall correctly, it almost looked like it was on like the surface of like the Death Star or like a similar like craft. And
Or a destroyer had, like, or something.
Multiple red lightsabers, and she was going up against like a blonde kid that looked almost like Luke. But what stood out to me is that they're not afraid to like embrace those exaggerated styles, and it didn't even look like there were any outlines whatsoever. So really, really cool to see all the different styles and just how they're going to embrace these motifs that we've seen, you know, for going on 40 years now. Like, the lightsaber is such an iconic piece of iconography. Sorry to be repetitive there, but to see it just visualized in so many different ways, I'm really excited. From like Zuhair, you brought up the old actual like Japanese take there, where the man is like revealing the lightsaber and bestowing it upon this young girl. I really, really curious to see what the story is there. But then one of the styles that really stuck out to me was it almost looked like rotoscoped, where you could see like all the individual sketch lines on the characters. Did that stick out to you? Yeah. Really, really excited to see it. Almost reminds me, I don't know if either one of you watched when The Dark Knight came out in 2008, like the couple of weeks before that released in theaters, they did a similar thing with the Dark Knight. I want to say it was like Tales from Gotham or something like that, but it was very much the same thing. We got eight unique stories all about Batman done in different animation styles. And if this is anywhere near that level of quality, we're in for a really good time. Whether you're a fan of anime or not, I encourage you. This could be your gateway.
I'll probably watch it.
Because I won't be shutting up about it.
I don't think between Zoo and BBK I'll have a choice.
That's fair.
But yeah, the one scene that you talked about, it was crazy. Like the antagonist had six arms and they all had flexible lightsabers. I was like, they were wrapping around. I was like, that's insane. But the one I'm most excited to see is the lightsaber that's actually a katana. Like it has to be
in a
sheath. That he carries on his hip, and I was like, "Whoa, that one's gonna be so cultural." I'm very excited.
Yeah.
I mean, my main worry with this is that they're just gonna do such a good job that I'm gonna want more right away.
Well, if
they leave you wanting more, that's not a bad thing.
Like, I want a series, like awesome ones.
Hey, you know, if the demand's there, it could happen.
Do it.
good reference. Okay, any final thoughts on Star Wars Visions before we dive into the Bad Batch here?
I need it now.
Okay. Well, all right, we are covering the Bad Batch episodes 9 through 16. And while we cover the back half, we can also use this as an opportunity to kind of talk on the series and the season as a whole. We do know that we're getting a season 2. I don't know if that release date has been revealed yet, but we know that it's on the way. I know animation sometimes takes a little bit longer to get done, but anyway.
I'm just happy they finally announced it.
Yeah. So I, it's definitely exciting to know that there's so much content on the way, but let's just go ahead and get your overall impressions on the back half of the season, as well as the series as a whole without going, you know, too spoiler or too specific. Now, I will plug the Star Wars Universe podcast. I had the opportunity to many of these episodes give my instant reactions, you know, within that day or a couple of days afterwards. So I encourage you to go back and check out that show. That's Matthew Fox there.
Yeah,
of course. Your hair didn't get to appear on as many episodes as I did, but I'll try not to be too self-referential when I refer to maybe some of the things I brought up there. But yeah. I encourage you to go back and listen to all those episodes that I didn't appear on, as well as that Zuhair did appear on. So. Anyway.
You guys are tag-teaming it. It's fine.
So what'd you think, Haley?
I really liked the back half. It was varied. There were lots of little arcs that some of them had a lot to do with the Bad Batch and maybe some of them didn't. And I really liked the ending. I thought it ended on an interesting note, which is great because we're getting a season two. If it had ended without knowing we were getting a season two, it might have felt differently.
Sure.
But I really liked it, except for one episode. Yeah.
As you mentioned.
Such a tease.
I mean, I'll talk about it now. We can get out of the way.
We'll save it.
Okay. All right. We'll go on.
Zuhair, how about you? How are you feeling?
I mean, like I mentioned, I'm glad that they finally announced that there was a season two, because I was watching all of these episodes and I had my complaints about some of them just being a little too episodic, a little too fillery, for not knowing if there was a season two. So that kind of tainted my initial view, because I was like, this is really what we're getting when there's only like four episodes left. But Mandalorian did a good job of season one setting up a lot of things that when season two came around, it's like, you remember this from last season. Like, let's just get straight to it. So I'm hoping that's the intent with this one, that they're just doing a lot of foundation building so that the next couple of seasons just kind of ride right in. But overall, a lot of the stuff that I wanted from the show and expected from it, I got pretty early on. And the back half obviously was really good. There's a lot of stuff I loved about it. But I was whelmed.
Mm.
I was whelmed as a whole with overwhelming moments, if that makes sense.
It makes total sense, actually. But if you will expound a little bit.
Yeah, so it was really good show, really good season. There was a couple times where it was kind of like, all right, this is pretty good. And then moments that just, you know, blew me away. But as a whole, I think I was happy with the show. I loved the show. Obviously, we've raved about how good the animation quality is. I even posted on Facebook right before because I was doing my rewatch. And I was like, God, this looks amazing. But I'm excited. I'm very excited to see where the story goes.
Yeah, here. Yeah.
But what you're describing, Zoo, is very much the Clone Wars formula. Like, there's ups. There were ups and downs in Clone Wars, and there are episodes where you're like, okay, great, moving on. Yeah. Like, and then there's the, and then there's like the season 7 final arc where you're just like destroyed as a human being from what they did. And I agree. I felt similar things.
The difference is that I watch Clone Wars as a binge. Like, I had the same story as you. Like, I watched Mandalorian season 1 and I was like, what are all these references? Let me watch Clone Wars. And every time I watched, like, I knew that there was more coming. So filler episodes were just kind of like, all right, whatever. Whereas this is just like, is this a one-shot show or is something coming after this? Because if not, they're wasting a lot of time right now. And I love these heroes and I want great stories.
Yeah, yeah. And I would say I probably land in a similar place as the two of you. I really enjoyed the series, but I do think there were maybe some missed opportunities and maybe they could have had a tighter story. So I think the comparisons to The Mandalorian are really apt. I felt like The Mandalorian kind of found that perfect episode length for a season where you got like a couple that you could maybe call filler or bottle episodes, what have you. But I really like what you brought up about the fact that season 2 paid a lot of that off. If that turns out to be the fact, it'll make me appreciate season 1 that much more for The Bad Batch in retrospect. But at this point in time, you know, as we were talking on the Star Wars Universe podcast week to week, we wondered whether or not the episodic storytelling was effective or not. And I think more often than not, it was, but it could have benefited maybe from losing an episode or two and just kind of using that momentum to get us there a little bit faster. But having all of us, you know, given our initial impressions here, let's just kind of cover what exactly took place in this back half of the season. So I feel like you can almost like break it up into a couple of episodes at a time, right? So
yeah, it's funny when Haley texted me, she was like, are we doing episode 8? Because that's one of my favorites. And I was like, no, but where it ends is where 9 started. So sure, let's talk about 8, because both of them together are a fantastic set of episodes. So yeah, Haley, if you want to take episodes 8 and 9 and talk about the whole situation with taking out the inhibitor chips and dealing with the Scrapper Guild.
Yeah, I loved episode 8 when I saw it, and it's called Reunion, and it's the episode after they get their inhibitor chips out, and I forget what that one's called, Battle Scars. But I love it because it finally kind of brought us back to some action. We had been sort of stale there for a few episodes in the first half, and it was real action, it was real feelings, and real stakes, it felt like. And, you know, at the end, we get the miraculous return of Cad Bane, which is so cool. And Omega is taken. And Hunter's like shot, and I thought they killed him at first. Which, I mean, you know, we thought somebody was going to die, right? But no, they didn't. And so, I don't know, I just loved the pacing of that episode. I think that's the one, and Scotty and I were messaging about it, where Omega and Tech have that little moment on the bridge, where she's like, Tech, what was the war like? So cute. And he's like so matter-of-fact with her, and I forgot to mention I'm on the Tech train with Scotty, so get ready for lots of Tech talk. He's my favorite.
Welcome to my Tech talk.
There was like so much heart in that episode, and then Crosshair being after them, he's like super scary, so I thought he might get one of them or a couple of them, and he ended up getting blasted in the face by his own bad idea, so that's karma.
And he was still chasing after them in his ship afterwards, like all bandaged up and wide-eyed and everything. I was like, dang, dude.
Yeah.
Which I have something to say about that like later on at the very end. But like he's so driven. It's like, is he driven to get his friends back or is he driven to actually capture them?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I will add real quick that his villain music is
so good.
It's about the same as the Winter Soldier music for me. Like when he comes up and that music hits.
Yeah, because like, it's like a synth. Like I'll try to again use my audio engineering skills to cue it in here, but it's like it kind of reminds me of like a sniper shot. It's almost like you hear that synth just come in. Like it is almost like that Winter Soldier screen. Like it's like,
yeah.
It's like oh, going down. If you didn't know,
such a good way of putting it. Yeah.
I love it. It's so good.
Mentioning, it's funny, I almost called Crosshair Dengar. And for those that are, so there's a character in the Star Wars universe, he made an appearance in Empire Strikes Back. He is one of the bounty hunters that is wearing the, almost looks like toilet paper covering a lot of his face. So there were theories out there when we first saw Crosshair bandaged up. I was like, are they making him retroactively? Are they turning him into Dengar? And no, that's not the case, but, no, yeah, still really cool just to see his dogged resolution there to track down his former brothers. I think at that point in time, we were led to believe it was just, you know, out of spite. But then we'll get to it at the end of the season. Maybe his motivations were a little murkier than we were led to believe. But yeah, so that episode 9 is called Bounty Lost. And you mentioned we get Cad Bane. And you also kind of mentioned how in a lot of these episodes, we either spend more or less time with the Bad Batch. And this ended up being an episode where we actually spent a little bit less time with the Bad Batch themselves and more time with these bounty hunters as well as Omega. And this, again, I'm not super familiar with the character of Cad Bane, but this series did a great job for me, just introducing me to the character, showing me what he's capable of, what his motivations are. And then anytime you set him up against somebody like Fennec Shand, every appearance of Fennec Shand in the Star Wars universe so far has been some of my favorite stuff. So awesome to see her return.
Because Ming-Na Wen is a goddess.
He's very problematic when it comes to getting his bounty.
Well, I like their... I feel like Cad Bane was even more bad in Bad Batch than he was in the Clone Wars. Like, yeah. You know he's a bad dude in the Clone Wars, but they kind of upped the ante with him. Like when he's chasing Omega through that abandoned Kaminoan facility, which was, I thought this episode was really beautiful, by the way. Mm-hmm. And he says, by hook or by crook, you're coming with me. Like you get shivers. You're like, oh shit, this guy's going to get me. You're like looking over your shoulder. Sure. that voice actor, I forget his name, it's Corey something, got such a captivating and commanding voice.
I wonder if business has been slow or something to the transition of the Empire that he's just like, I need to get this bounty because business is running slow for me right now.
Corey Burton is the voice actor's name. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, all the rust and the fog and how dreary everything was. Like, oh, this is pretty.
It was so cool. It looked so real.
Oh, Jay Scott, I meant to tell you. What's the droid's name again?
Yeah.
Toto
totally reminds me of Mineta from My Hero.
Oh, really?
Just because of his bottom half looks like Mineta's like weird like purple underwear.
Okay.
Thing.
Yeah, yeah. The oversized underwear that the
just a giant bowl.
I can see that.
I was cracking up when I was watching that today. I was like, I don't like it.
Yeah.
I love Toto. I love that he doesn't speak in any contractions.
Oh, I hadn't picked up on that.
No. He's like, I am not sure we will do that today. And his sentences are all like robotic, but his voice is still kind of human.
So
it's funny.
Proper and snooty.
Yeah, I hadn't picked up on that at all. I knew it was Seth Green doing the voice, but I'm going to be interested to go back and listen to the performance now because, yeah, he does do a good job of being a droid and being detached in some ways, but there's always still that little bit of humanity at the bottom of it. Like when he's asking Cad Bane to fix his leg, like you really feel bad for him.
Mm-hmm. You do. He is pretentious, though, Zoo. You're right.
It is interesting how selective they are with droid emotions throughout these series. Like, which ones are you supposed to care for? Which ones are you not? I think the animated stuff is trying to push the emotional side of it more than the live action ever has.
Well, we had L3 and Solo, but that one is kind of a mixed bag in terms of reception. I like Solo. I'm on the record. I think. Yeah. And this is a whole nother conversation. I'm sure we'll get feedback about this one. But my thing about Yeah. We don't My have thing about time Solo, I'll just be real quick. I think 75% of that movie is really good, and the 25% that's not good is really bad. But anyway.
And then I like Dio from Rise of Skywalker. Now you're really going to get some hate mail. Sorry, guys. But I love Dio. Yeah, Dio's cool. He's so cute.
Which one's that?
He's the little green one.
Yeah, he basically rolled around on like a wheel with like a cone head almost.
Yeah, they rescue him from...
Oh, the one that Abrams voiced? Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, he's sort of portrayed as kind of like Toto, like a little abused, but...
he's our brave little toaster. Anyway.
I'm just going to throw out that I like BD-1 from the video game.
Oh, from Fallen Jedi Fallen Order, right? The one that like rides around on your shoulder. Yeah, he was cool. He was super cool.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, cute.
So we have a big reveal in this episode from who better but Tech. He is the one who has been analyzing Omega's DNA, and he finds out that she's first generation from Jango, which is a huge
she's essentially
piece of information.
Boba Fett's sister, right? Yeah.
Basically.
How crazy would it be if they were twins?
Yeah, I guess they could be fraternal twins. She's got the blonde hair going on where he looks like just more like straight up Jango. But
Like if they were splicing them, their DNA together, and like they ended up with little twin clones. That's so cute.
Yeah, they were like making Boba initially, but they were like, let's see if we can make a girl version.
Yeah,
there was a lot of dialogue that I guess, because I haven't been rewatching as much, that I missed. Well, not missed, but it didn't click to me when we got to like the later episodes of the season. That being one of them, like how heavily they talked about her being Gen 1 and then her interaction with Rex saying, it's like, oh yeah, you're Gen 1 because they can see the lines and they talk about.
Right.
Like, it's already a fact that they're older. So, the way that the later episodes were approached, the way that people reacted to them and how much emphasis they gave, I guess kind of like tainted me a little bit, because I was like, had they really not talked about it before? And then when I watched the episodes, I was like, wow, I'm listening to other people too
much. Well, they do. They kind of throw it away a little bit, though. Like, if you're not paying attention, you may not notice that that's what they're talking about.
Especially because these episodes weren't heavy on the Bad Batch. It was more about, like, this one specifically, the Bounty Hunters.
Mm-hmm.
Which had some of the best animated fights in the season.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I just wrote Ming-Na Wen rules. I feel like that sums it up.
Little JKD stance, just ready to take him on. Like, yes.
Now, forgive me. I'm having a little bit of a brain fart here. What is the next episode?
Episode 10 is
Common Ground. Okay, that's right. That's right.
That's correct. When they're on Raxus.
That and Devil's Deal were kind of grouped together.
Okay.
Well, Devil's Deal is the Ryloth start.
Wait. Right. No, you're
getting
good.
Raxus.
Yeah, you're good. So I was.
Raxus is the Star Wars equivalent of.
Well,
India,
it's
apparently.
The Separatist capital, right? And that's when we get to see. Was it Senator Singh? Is it Senator Singh? Or yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this episode starts and I was like, wow, this is a lot of Middle Eastern architecture. Okay, they got the mustache and the turban. We're going for Indian vibes. He's got the accent. Wow, in a world of Star Wars where you make up the most bizarre names, you give the Indian guy the name Singh. Couldn't get any more creative over there. Cool. I feel seen, but I don't know how I feel about being seen.
As viewers of the Clone Wars, where I have obviously have my gaps, I've seen choice episodes here and there. Is Raxus a place that we'd spent time on before? I know it is touted as like the Separatist capital, and I think through dialogue, I think the first time we see the Bad Batch, they're kind of talking about a mission on Raxus, kind of talking about some of their exploits on Raxus. No.
Yeah, Zoo, is that the one where, what's his name? Forrest Whitaker's
Saw Gerrera?
Character. Yeah, is that where Saw and his sister are first? Is it Raxus?
I know which one you're talking about. I think that may be it. Because I know there was a lot of like separatist planets that they had to work on, and I feel like that the senator was in a couple of the Dooku meetings as well. Okay. Like when they had little council meetings. But I can't remember if that was
specifically It might not be. We might be totally wrong. But there, in the Clone Wars, there are episodes where the Republic is under the radar helping these militants basically on a separatist planet. And it's Saw Gerrera and his sister. Right. Whose name I'm also forgetting.
That's okay. That's okay.
But, I mean, that's all focused on not the Bad Batch because they didn't exist yet, but it's possible that they were sent back or something like that.
Yeah.
There was enough influence in the Clone Wars to make the people who watched it kind of go like, okay, sure, I have some background information on this. Like I said, the episode that she mentioned, and like there were specific episodes where you got to kind of see the separatist side of things and how they were having their meetings and what their objectives and goals and stuff were. So
we're wrong. Oh. We're super wrong. Onderon in the Clone Wars.
All good. Well, and one of
the internet.
it's all good. And some of the dialogue that came back to my mind, I guess, kind of gives credence to that as well. When Echo says he always thought that he'd wind up on Raxus eventually, just not under these circumstances, you know, rescuing a separatist. But one of the things just that stuck out to me visually is like how much this planet kind of reminded me of Naboo. And it's like Naboo was the first planet we saw kind of in conflict with the separatists. I guess the Trade Federation specifically, but the Trade Federation is very much a part of the separatists. So it was just kind of interesting. It's almost like any conflict when you kind of like look behind the veil, the side that you're fighting is probably not all that different from you. And it's just a beautiful planet, especially, you know, considering that their main fighting force is droids. You would think it would be a little bit more industrial, but you see a nice melding of, you get a lot of nice fall foliage with the architecture there. And it seems to be pretty tasteful. And obviously their leader is a man that cares for the people, even when he's under the gun and under pressure and the Imperial officer is right there saying, you know, this is what you need to say. He does what's right. And that basically sets up the Bad Batch for a rescue mission. And it's kind of the opposite of what we just talked about, where Omega was a little bit more of the focus in her escape from the bounty hunters. Here she has to kind of learn to take orders and stay behind while the Bad Batch does this rescue mission. And for my money, this episode still featured one of the most standout action sequences for me, when the tanks are being fired upon and they basically have to figure out, we got to go from one tank to the next and that's still not working. We have to like adjust on the fly. I loved all that stuff. And speaking of tech love, Tech got a few good.
I mean, he just does only everything for them all the time, but whatever.
Exactly.
I know this show focuses heavily on Omega, but this is probably by far one of my favorite episodes because she wasn't in it.
Aww.
Because you see how efficient they are as a team and how much like repertoire they have with each other and how much of an understanding and how much like just,
sure,
you know, battle reps they've had with each other. Like they don't have to say much. They don't have to communicate much. They don't have to look out for anybody except for what their target is. And it's just boom, 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 boom. Let's just get through it. Like this was probably their most efficient mission throughout.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
The whole series.
And it was it's funny because when I brought up Tech, Hunter says something to the effect like, have Omega circle back or something like that. And Tech's like, well, that would work out if Omega was with us, but she's not. That's impossible.
So sassy in his way.
Oh, he
doesn't mean to be.
Well, and yes, I think even before that, he was like having the discussion with Echo where it's like, I was merely pointing out the fact that, what was it? That the codes worked. So it's like,
oh yeah. Cause Echo's like being all salty paranoid that they're helping separatists. And Tech's like, yes, you've mentioned that several times. I so identify with this character.
God, he reminds me of Sheldon so much.
See, I don't think he's anything like
Sheldon's a bit of an extreme. He's
He's just direct and black and white.
I call him the Donatello of the group, and that's a reference to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles there. But while we're on the tech love here, his armor always like stands out the most to me. It's the brightest. He is the only one that shows any amount of his face through his goggles, and he's just so unique. And
He's always got his iPad.
Yeah, yeah. That's one of the things about this series. As much as it was focusing on the group, I guess one of the things I kind of would have wished for is more moments to focus on them as individuals and just kind of get endeared to them. And Tech is one that I always felt like his personality just came through so strong, and his little one-liners he was able to deliver. He was just always one of my favorites. So.
I think he gets actually highlighted a lot in this series. Yeah. And like I told Zoo a few days ago, Hunter is kind of the low point for me in the series of the Bad Batch outside of Crosshair. Because they just don't show him doing his thing very often. And we saw him do a lot of it at the end of the Clone Wars when they're introduced. But, you know, and maybe it is just his concern for Omega that is distracting him the whole time. But it definitely highlighted, I think, the series as a whole, Tech and Wrecker, the most.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I'll ride that Hunter thought a little bit. I do like what you said, that, you know, she has this concern for Omega, but it's also like the concern of him being the leader of the group in a time where it's like all they know how to be is soldiers, and he's responsible for them figuring out what they do next. So I see that kind of like emotional burden of like, how do I be strong and take responsibility for everything that happens to us from here on out, and maintain my composure as well? Because there's a lot of times where, like, Rex and the guy in the second episode, the deserter, they had to, like, put him in check. Like, dude, like, you're not a soldier right now. Like, he's doing a lot of the development on his team's behalf. Whereas I feel like Tech, there was a good middle ground where all he had was like his nerdy one-liners just to kind of fill in the audience.
Sure.
And then there was like certain bigger episodes where he had more dialogue, like towards the end, like on Ryloth, and then the last couple of episodes, I feel like his character really blossomed. But there was quite a few episodes where he was just there to kind of fill in the audience and have like a silly one-liner for Sid to kind of shut him down. And I wish we got more of him actually being him, because he is quite the badass. And I feel like it was a little underrated throughout the series. I feel like he was cheated just a bit.
Yeah. And I do feel like every single member got their moments to shine here and there. Like, the show did a good job in that regard. But what you're saying about Hunter there, I do agree. I think one of the main things the show did a few different things. It set up Omega as a character. It showed us the kind of the transition from the Republic to the Empire, especially going from clones to stormtroopers. But then the other thing for the Bad Batch, it's asking this question: what does it mean to be a soldier? And, you know, do good soldiers follow orders? Do they follow them blindly? And what kind of soldier can you be when you're making your own choices? So in that regard, yeah, they do kind of make Hunter the focal point for that in a few key instances. But I do agree with Haley. I would have liked for more opportunities for him to struggle with that a little bit more, or have his leadership questioned a little bit more. And yet he does get moments to do action, but I just kind of felt myself, it was outside of like the sequences with like Fennec Shand and Cad Bane and stuff like that, very like interpersonal battles. Just like I was talking about that tank sequence in the episode we were just talking about, he gets to do some really cool aerial and acrobatic stuff. I just feel like the camera never really focused on him doing it as much as it should have.
Mm-hmm. My favorite Hunter moment from this half of the episodes is actually when they recover Omega from Cad Bane. And she rushes in to hug him because, like, he is her main person. He's the one she connected with the most right away. And she, like, tries to follow him and do what he does. And so she runs into him, and he's been shot by Cad Bane in the episode prior. And, you know, he, like, winces, but he doesn't say anything because that's what caretakers do. That's what parents do. You know, they kind of push through that pain. So he has a lot of, I think, you're right, Zoo, the emotional beats.
Yeah.
Probably more than the rest of them.
He needs a hug.
Just not after he's been shot.
Yeah.
Well, and he was given a nickname by Sid. So I think if you were given a nickname by Sid, you did something significant.
He was given two.
Well, okay, so he had bandana. What was the other one? Because I know goggles.
She calls him dark and broody.
Okay.
So funny.
Did any of the other members get any nicknames from Sid? We got bandana, goggles.
She called Omega Tiny.
Tiny, okay.
Yeah, and goggles.
Okay.
I like goggles.
Yeah, goggles is good.
Because it was always like his one-liner, and then she cut him off.
She's like, "Yeah, I don't need like, I don't need a history lesson." Goggles.
I love it.
Yeah, so I think that kind of wraps the bow there on Common Ground. So from there, we get into a little bit of a two-episode arc that, for my purposes, I appreciate as a nice little spin-off story, but when I was doing this rewatch, it was one of those times where it felt like, you know, this could be told somewhere else. No?
You should watch Rebels.
Okay.
I loved it just because we got more Chopper, and I'm always happy with more Chopper.
Yes. Chopper is my favorite.
I squealed when I saw him for the first time. I was like, yes, Chopper's back.
Chopper was great. And he's As we were talking about these episodes, he's the third droid that we got introduced to. So we had Toto, and then we had GS-8, who we didn't really bring up. But I like GS-8.
Who was
GS-8? GS-8 was Senator Singh's protocol droid that he dispatched to start the rescue mission anyway. And now, yeah, we've got Chopper. And I will say, yeah, Chopper is probably one of the big... and Hera. I liked Hera a lot, too. And just getting to spend time on the planet of Ryloth. I really did enjoy the episodes. It's just like in terms of like telling this story and getting from point A to point B, it did feel like very much a detour.
Yeah. The first one was a little more challenging to get through than the second one. But and even seeing Hera and Chopper didn't. Sometimes I was like, OK, that's great, but let's move on. So I get it. But Ryloth in the Clone Wars is such a hot spot for so much conflict that it really does make sense they went back there just to show that it's kind of one of those places that's always in war and always trying to get occupied, and how quickly the Empire moved in and occupied them again.
Especially because we had this heavy episode with the Bad Batch and then a heavy episode with Omega being kidnapped, and then it went to like not seeing any of them except for more than 30 seconds.
Right.
Just like,
yeah.
Yeah. It was a bold choice. I'll give him that.
I think that one thing Dave Filoni really likes to do, though, is fill in these gaps that exist in Star Wars canon. And he does such a good job of it. And so if you, you know, if you have watched Rebels and you do love it because it's the best Star Wars content that exists so far, you were just like over the moon when you heard them say Cham Syndulla. You were like, we're getting Hera, we're getting young Hera. And it was cool. Okay.
Yeah, I guess I always need to keep that in the back of my mind, you know.
That you're missing out.
Yeah, well, very true. Very true. I will say that is the thing about the Bad Batch, is my first real foray into Star Wars animation outside of those micro series from Genndy Tartakovsky that came out before Revenge of the Sith. I definitely am motivated to go back and watch the Clone Wars and watch Rebels. So,
oh, don't forget we have Hottie Clone Trooper Hauser in this arc with his undercut. Damn, boy.
I won't even argue with it. I've got the thirst for Hauser too. Hauser is probably my favorite of the new clones outside of the Bad Batch introduced.
Oh, yeah.
That reminds me, I'm trying to think of how to word this because I'm about to go down a rabbit hole. So I was listening to Star Wars Universe podcast and they were doing coverage of the last episode. And Paul Hoppe was talking about how it's called the Clone Wars, how it's plural.
Okay.
When it's supposed to be just one war. And his theory was that, like, and the discussion of this episode with Hauser and, you know, getting the clones to rebel against the Empire was like, is there actually going to be a war where the leftover clones are fighting the Empire? Because that was one of my favorite things about the original Battlefront 2
video game was that you play as the 501st, and one of the missions was that you convert to being stormtroopers,
right,
and you have to wipe out the rest of the Republican clone troopers.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this huge battle on Kamino, which was the most confusing mission ever because everyone looked the same, so you didn't know if you were shooting the wrong guy or not.
Right. Just look for the head fins.
Yeah, right. So it's making me wonder if that actually set something up to where there's like a really, really big rebel faction of clones. And I know that in Rebels we have an episode where we see a few of our characters old and retired and this and that. So like maybe some kind of like fed in or some just kind of just agreed to the Empire to like leave them alone. But I kind of want to see that now.
I kind of want to see it too. The only thing that makes me think we might not is that what you're talking about from Rebels, they kind of make it sound like they just retired, like they just peaced out. So, but maybe they're just, maybe they have PTSD and they don't want to talk about it. I don't know.
A few of them are pretty happy to put their fat armor back on.
Yeah, I certainly hope Hauser, you know, returns. And if anything else I'll say about these episodes, it definitely did a good job of, again, one of the things the series did is show that transition from clone trooper to stormtrooper. And it set up Admiral Rampart a lot. It kind of showed his levels of deception, especially with the, was it Senator Ta, with having Crosshair take him out. Mm-hmm. And again, we talked about on the Star Wars Universe podcast, but at the time we were a little unclear with the whole attempted assassination versus, okay, this guy's actually...
Oh, I thought he was dead.
In the subsequent episode, they mentioned that. I guess it was like a really accurate...
He's making a full recovery.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like doing their propaganda
exactly.
thing.
I know that podcast, the Star Wars Universe podcast, talked a lot about wanting more of Tarkin, but I really like Rampart's character.
He grew on me, Yeah.
I think it was a good addition, especially with how much he was like, with how many mistakes that he made. I like a character that can just like, they can make mistakes and correct it. Because he even said like, oh, I guess I did underestimate them. I didn't listen to Crosshair. And when Crosshair asked for permission, he was like, yeah, good. So you've earned it. Sure, go for it. So it's a really cool, good amount of development for that character in such a short amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Something notable about episode 12 at the end, the Syndulas have been freed and reunited with Hera, and Tech, wink wink, teaches Hera how to scramble a ship's signature, which is her trademark thing in Rebels.
Scrambles
their ship's signature all the time. It's how they get through all the things that they get through.
She's such a badass.
So that was
pilot.
A huge nod, and it was all about Tech.
Tech is indelible. Tech makes waves.
Way to go, Tech.
Tech forever. Tech.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so after this couple of episodes that take place on Ryloth and introduce us to the character of Hera that will go on to feature prominently in Rebels, we get another one of these standalone episodes. I guess we could kind of, if we wanted to, we could, I guess it really doesn't make too much sense to couple Infested and Warmantle together, because Warmantle really leads right into the... Okay,
please don't do that. That's disrespectful.
I apologize. Forgive me.
This episode was pointless.
Okay, that's fair.
Pointless.
But I do like Infested for certain things about it. I loved getting the lizard back, and I can't remember. What was the lizard's name? It was named after...
Ruby.
The bird lizard.
Yeah.
Wrecker was freaking out.
And then just, you know... As much as it was, again, at that point in the season, the momentum was all building up, and it really did feel like we kind of pumped the brakes and, okay, this is a little side mission with Sid and dealing with some of Sid's, troubles. I really did like the character, and I'm trying to pull up his name here, Roland Durand. It was just nice to see a kind of smarmy, cocksure, fed with a silver spoon kind of villain, like a different just flair in the Star Wars universe. And I guess the closest thing from my exposure that we've seen since then is probably like Dryden Voss from Solo. Again, I keep bringing up Solo.
My favorite thing about that episode was definitely the Pikes.
So much about them, but having that moment to see how sinister they actually are. I love their voices so much. It gave me heebie-jeebies. It just made me so uncomfortable, and like their composure and like how calm they are. Like they had guns pointed at them. It's like, you don't want to do this. We're giving you an option to make it simple. And then the next scene, you see everyone just like on the ground, be senseless. I was like, ooh, yeah, this is definitely the highlight of this episode for me. And I hope we see more of the Pikes after this, because we've, you know, seen them here and there and heard about them here and there. But that was the most they've ever shown of what they're capable of and why they're meant to be feared and why they have such a successful operation. And
yeah.
Yeah.
They give them a pretty good showing in season 7 of the Clone Wars,
too. Okay.
With the Martez sisters.
Oh, yeah.
But the Martez sisters,
who we saw earlier in this season.
I know. I mean, I don't like them either. But that arc with the Pikes and Ahsoka, it does show their ruthlessness.
Yeah, it was more about the sisters and what could have been a better Ahsoka story. But that's a different
And I guess just to kind of, if there's anybody listening that's not like super familiar with the Pikes like myself, I had no idea who they were. They just kind of acted as like the benefactors to this Roland character. And he was charged with getting them their spice shipment. So when the Bad Batch interfered, that put both the Bad Batch as well as Roland in the crosshairs of the Pike. And that is when we really got to see, you know, how scared. What's that? Crosshairs.
Crosshairs.
It wasn't even intended.
Well, and Scotty, you've been talking about Solo, the rescue mission that they go on to get. Why do they go to the spice mining thing? But those are the Pikes.
Oh, right. Yes.
At the beginning, isn't that a
yes,
Pike?
Yes, yeah. And somebody mentioned on the Star Wars Universe podcast I appeared on. Yeah, so I need to go back and rewatch Solo.
They're the drug lords of Star Wars. Right.
That was me.
Like, that's mining spices. That's their
thing. They're the cartel.
Yes.
But it seems like it, by the way. Everybody's so scared of them. But yeah. All right. Well, I guess there's not too terribly much more to say on Infested, being that the proceedings were a little more removed from everything else that was going on. So let's get right into Warmantle.
Yeah, these next three episodes are definitely its own clunk.
Clunk, I like that.
A clunk of episodes.
Yeah.
Have I not said that before?
I don't think so, but I like it. Yeah.
All right, I won't call them arcs anymore. I'll just call them clunks from here on out.
Yeah, please do. Please do. Haley, you talked about how beautiful some of the early episodes were, like the time that we got to spend on Bespin. And for me, I got similar vibes here, just being on the forest planet of Darrow. Like, it really did make me feel kind of like Endor, like Return of the Jedi. And all of that was filmed in the Redwood Forest of California, which is my backyard. So I'm just always
lucky.
Yeah. Right. Just always really impressed to the lighting, like just seeing the filtered light fall through the foliage and just get, you know, cascaded across the characters' faces and armor, as well as just the foreground and whatnot. It just really, really resonated with me.
Yeah, it makes for a more immersive watching experience, too, as opposed to like the very beginning of Clone Wars when things were still really rough and you're like, I'm watching a computer game.
For sure. Well, I guess in terms of like what happened in this episode, Zuhair, did you have something you wanted to say about Darrow?
Which one's Darrow again?
It's the forest planet. So I guess in the opening,
what we've been talking about.
I'm bad with names, all right. I'm like literally, as you guys are, I'm not gonna lie, I totally zoned out because I'm literally like sitting back just thinking about that scene of him like running through and just how beautiful the mountains and everything were. And I should probably start paying attention again. So yeah, totally slipped up on the name because I actually didn't zone out, just wishing I was sitting there in those mountains.
You're good.
Stunning planet. That's arguably the best location work they did in this series. Like,
even
I loved
from the first episode with the waterfall.
I loved a lot of the rain stuff, but Yeah, there was something. I think because of how much chaos is in this show, there was a level of serenity in that. And that was the last moment of the serenity that the Bad Batch got. Because I love episodes where it's like you have a mission and it just goes bad. Like the Captain Cold line from The Flash. It's like, make the plan, execute the plan, throw the plan out the window, make a new plan. Yeah. That's exactly what these clunk of episodes were.
Yeah.
And this was kind of the last peaceful moment that the Bad Batch got to experience. And there's something just about the way that everything was. It was the calm before the storm in the series. And like looking at it in hindsight, you really get that vibe from it.
Hmm. Yeah.
I wonder if it makes me think about the forest planet in season 2 of The Mandalorian, where they go to find Ahsoka and what was it called? Corvus. Makes me wonder if what happened to that planet would happen to this one, because the Empire is there and they stripped that planet and it looked just devastated, which would be sad.
I didn't even think about that, but that's the Empire. No, you're good. That is probably what the Empire would do. I guess it's worth mentioning the whole reason that they're even on this planet Darrow is because we get introduced to another eccentric clone, Gregor. Makes his harrowing escape from the Imperial facility that, you know, in the beginning of the episode, we're kind of led to believe that he was training fellow clones. But we find out that this is very much the phasing out of clone troopers into these TK troopers, as well as we get to see some Republic commandos. But this is a mission that Hunter very much has his own misgivings about taking on in the first place, even though it is at the request of one of their good friends, Rex. So outside of that, you know, they successfully rescue Gregor.
I'm just thinking at the end of Reunion, he was like, hey, give me a call if you need anything. Like, he was just emphasizing to Rex, like, we always got your back. And then when he calls him, he's like, should we go do this?
That's a fair point.
Well, they've been through a lot since then, though. Yeah.
And I love how Echo immediately comes to his defense. And that's good, I guess. We kind of talked about all of the characters getting their individual moments to shine and stuff like that. And I felt like Echoes were a little bit more front loaded in terms of them, you know, coming off of that PTSD. Excuse me. I don't know. This dyslexia there. And then, you know, just kind of functioning as almost like the detached droid of the group. But this was one of those nice instances where he got to, you know, vouch for Rex and really validate that request there.
I was honestly surprised he ended up being my favorite character of the
match. Oh, really? Match. Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to ask that later on, but...
Who my favorite was? Oh, you guys were talking about Tech for so long. I just wanted to put it in there that...
You want us to keep talking about Tech?
No.
Is that
back to Tech.
We will, because I have more things to say about him. Sorry to go a little backwards, but like his moment in Rescue of Ryloth was really cool. When, what's her name?
Omega?
Syndulla.
Oh, Hera.
No. Hera?
Yeah. When Hera finally got to fly and have like her badass mission and Tech was coming in, it's like, that was pretty reckless, but great job. Like him as a pilot is really cool.
Yeah, that was a great line. It was something to the effect like, yeah, your unpredictable and dangerous flying is just as undiscernible to them as it is to us.
Yeah. That was such a wonderful line. I really love that Echo. This was kind of the last we got to see like highlights of Echo 2, because I can't remember which one of you I was talking to about it, but AZ kind of took the place of Echo in the last couple of episodes, so he was just kind of there. Stupid droid attention. But Echo was kind of like, he was the only one that really had like a moral compass. Because everybody else was so used to just... The Bad Batch is called in when nobody else can get the job done. Whereas Echo has been with Rex making tough decisions for so many years. So he really is like the point of like moral and ethical perspective for the group. And every time that Hunter is having trouble coming up with like what to do or what's in the best interest of the group, like I feel like Echo is kind of like the voice that kind of like helps him stay on the path.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's fair.
And just like Tech, I feel like he was a little underappreciated in the show, but Echo, he really won my heart in this one. He was a fantastic character and very relatable.
Yeah, I felt like he had a couple of moments too with Omega where he got to show a little bit more of that tough love, where Hunter was a little more reticent to even, he had his moments where he butted heads with her too. And even like, I remember Wrecker giving him the shoulder check when she had, you know, proven herself at being a good strategist and getting them out of debt. But anyway, going back to Echo. Yeah. I agree. He was probably the most gruff overall of the group, but I think that's, they need that. And he served his role very well, but it was nice for him to get his last little moment to shine, because I'm fully on board with you. He was very much set to the back burner for these final couple of episodes. But anyway, just kind of talking about what happened in Warmantle, just to wrap up here. They do successfully rescue Gregor, but they lose Hunter in the process. And we got, again, I talked about it on the coverage of the Star Wars Universe podcast, but for my money, this is some of the best dog fighting we've got to see in the Star Wars Universe, period. I love the aerial action.
Yeah, it was really cool. And again, this was one where the stakes felt very real, because you kind of knew someone was going to get left behind, but it was sort of a jostle of who was it going to be. And it ended up being Hunter, which was probably the right thing, because I think that's when I started to see his character come through a little more, when he sacrificed himself.
Yeah. And that tumble down the trees, that was brutal.
That was like Bucky falling out of the helicopter type, and Falcon in the Winter Soldier. But he didn't have a vibranium arm.
Yeah, it is kind of funny, the varying levels of clone trooper and stormtrooper armor durability in the Star Wars universe. Sometimes, you know, a point blank blaster range, you're done and your chest is on fire. Other times you're okay.
You're fine.
Yeah.
We also have where Vice Admiral Rampart gives the order on Kamino in this episode that they're done with the Kaminoans, and he takes Nala Se. And then they go in and they arrest Lama Su. This was another thing where I thought they killed him, but Wikipedia says interesting. He was arrested.
I'm glad we have Wikipedia at the fingertips, because, yeah, I assume that he died as well. When we had the sliding doors kind of hiss shut, and it just kind of leaves on that ominous note. But I guess he may still have his uses as a political pawn.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, with Nala Se being free, in a way, to be used. I don't know. Like, what's the conflict going to be there?
I have my theory.
Let's hear it.
I feel like she's going to be involved in creating Grogu.
Grogu would already be created, though, wouldn't he? Because this is post-Revenge of the Sith.
That's true. Yes.
Right?
This is post Order 66.
In Mandalorian, that he was at the temple.
Oh, he was? I don't remember being at the temple.
Because you told me that, and I was like, oh, yeah. And then later on, I was like, wait. I think he was already.
Actually, she could have still been involved.
Yeah, if she didn't have a direct hand in Grogu, certainly down the line, you know, Sidious's eventual return. You know, Dominic Monaghan had that throwaway line in Rise of Skywalker. Ancient Sith cloning tech.
Yeah, like, he just knew what he was talking about.
I'm sure she was involved in that in some capacity. Yeah, but it's poignant that you bring up that point, because that is kind of what sets us up for these final two episodes. Crosshair takes Hunter back to Kamino. So not only do we have to get this rescue of Hunter, we also get to witness the destruction of the Kamino cloning facility. And is it Topeka City? Topeka. Okay.
Topeka.
I think I'm in Topeka, Kansas. Sorry.
Topeka's the capital here.
getting the lines blurred here. And yeah, Zuhair, you and I kind of talked off air a little bit about how effective we thought these two episodes worked as a finale. And while I did think they did a good job of bringing this story to a close and giving us some satisfying conflicts between The Bad Batch and Crosshair. I kind of went on record in the beginning of this series, like I was kind of optimistic for the darkest outcome. And while Crosshair very much is still, you know, set in his ways and seems to be at odds with the Bad Batch, we got to see his motivations a lot more. We got that revelation that he had the inhibitor chip removed a long time ago, but he truly did feel betrayed by his brothers, and that he thought that Hunter just made the wrong choice and that he wants to extend. Oh, what you got?
How do we know his inhibitor chip was removed?
Yeah, I was wondering if he was lying about that.
We don't know, because they don't do it at the beginning, because they say, can you turn him up? Like, they intensify it. Or at least that's what we're led to believe. And then we're led to think that maybe it got burned out when he got blasted by the ion engine.
Yeah, that was my guess.
But these are all things we don't really know. Or maybe he's just a bug.
Yeah, that's all fair. It does make you kind of wonder why they even showed the sequence of it being enhanced in the first place, because that dialogue, I don't have it right off the top of my head, or I don't have the script in front of me, but the way he said it did make me think that his inhibitor chip had been removed before Order 66.
Yeah. And so did they feed him that information? Did they brainwash him? Like, there's just a lot up in the air with that.
So
that I'm not totally sold.
I'm going to shelf that a little bit. So let's pretend that this inhibitor chip stuff isn't a factor.
Okay.
We watched this series understanding that the Empire is the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
But this series has shown that there are a lot of people who are for the Empire and are very pro-Empire. They think that the Jedi actually were the bad guys. They think that they just want the war to stop, and Palpatine's the one who made that happen. And you know, I don't want to like reference current events too much, but there actually is a situation going on right now where it's like, when you look at the feed of like what's happening on the other side of the world, like there are people who are excited about this takeover happening because they feel like it's the best for their country. And that's what's happening here, that some people are happy with the Empire. And we were talking about how Hunter is a character who doesn't know how to be anything outside of a soldier, and how his team doesn't know how to be anything outside of a soldier. Crosshair is going through that same thing. And while they have been working through with each other and thinking that they're brothers, like, they do have the differing opinion. And Crosshair's being that, all I know how to be is a soldier, the Empire's letting me do that. I get to stay as a soldier. If I stay with the Empire, why would we leave? We even had the people who were like joining, like the humans who were joining as soldiers for the Empire, because they got food, they got a place to sleep, they got paid, and like, oh, the Republic never did that for me. I feel like Crosshair's just kind of in that same boat where it's like, we have it good here. We're doing what we're good at here. Why would you want to leave that? We have our missions, we get fed, we live, we do what we were made to do. Inhibitor chip or not, I think that's just his perspective, like, as an individual. And I feel like that's something that's what's pushing the story of him wanting to stay with the Empire, not so much inhibitor chip stuff. That's kind of how I read it towards the end.
I agree. There's just like, it's kind of an unreliable narrator thing.
Yeah.
So it could be a factor moving on. It could not. They could just have really said that and meant it. Sometimes you just never know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if the future says something different, great. But that's just kind of how I read it. I was looking at him as a person more than I was what the technology was perceiving him to do.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's always the way to go about it. Even though these are larger than life stories, there's obviously a lot of sci-fi, a lot of fantasy elements at the end of the day. The reason we like these stories so much is because they are human and emotional stories. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I appreciate those takeaways there. I guess before we get into like the final episode itself, because it became kind of a escape from the sinking city kind of thing, where all of the people were pitted together and needed to rely on each other to survive. The sequence where Crosshair had to make that choice to team up with his former brother and fight the droids that, you know, Omega unleashed on trying to help her team as a distraction, ended up, it did help ultimately, but it was ended up being a bit of a problem there for a second. It did have a lot of echoes from that first episode where we got to see, you know, Tarkin test out the Bad Batch. Did you guys get similar symmetry there between the scenes?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And it always impresses me how dark the training room is now, because it's shown several times over the course of these animated series, and it's just like totally
okay.
different now than it used to be, and the droids are a lot scarier, and so it's an interesting kind of
evolution.
Yeah, and contextually it tells you what's going on too.
The droids reminded me of the droids in season 2 of Mandalorian, because they were pretty menacing. Oh, the
dark troopers.
And I'm glad that we got troopers, to see like how capable these droids were, because Luke just kind of offed them in a sleep. It's like, oh man, these guys are actually pretty tough. It's amazing they didn't use it in the war more often.
Wow. Right.
Well,
cost should have used hindsight.
I do like that we get reunited with AC3 in this episode. And I actually wrote down in an earlier episode, Omega mentions him. Oh, she mentions AZ-3 to Toto when she's saying that she can fix him. And so they kind of set up her relationship with him. And I also love him from the Clone Wars arc with Fives, where they are learning about the inhibitor chips. He's just so... he's a stinker, but he's helpful and he's good.
He'll do anything for
science.
Yeah, he's more like Sheldon. There we go. There we go.
That's interesting. I don't have that context of his appearances in the Clone Wars to go off of, but
we should change that.
I should. I will make that right. Now that we have our fourth and final droid introduced, I think I know the answer here, but I did want to ask.
Reintroduced.
Thank you.
Yeah.
He was in the first episode.
True. He's reintroduced in multiple ways then. What I was going to ask is I think I know the answer here, but if you had to have a droid companion of these four, which would you choose? Okay.
Chopper. Yeah, he's willing Chopper. To do whatever.
I had a feeling that was going to be the answer for both of you, but
he's got a dark side.
I like to think of him as the, he kind of reminds me of, what's his name? Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino.
Okay.
Just like this old vet. He just wants to chill on his porch and do his own thing, but then comes knocking and you just see like how much of a ruthless, cranky old vet he is. Like, he's just super capable, but he's just like, I don't want to be here. Screw all of you.
But he has a heart for his people. Like, he's very loyal to his companions, especially Hera.
He's such a jerk to his team. It's so funny, especially Ezra.
He's so rude, but I love him.
He had his little espionage mission arms. That went awry during the rescue on Ryloth there.
Wow. Yeah.
They always do.
Did the amount of paint jobs this droid has had on like spy missions is insane.
You know, I guess true. Now that I'm thinking about it too, I left a droid off the table. We had the Gonk droid. He was Gonky.
Oh, Gonky.
Forgot about. He was. He had his moments. He was
helpful in the War Mantle episode.
Even though he was defective, just like the rest of them, he got to provide some auxiliary power there to make the rescue.
Poor guy was so short period of time.
But my answer was going to be, and again, I don't have the, I haven't been quite as endeared to Chopper, even though I loved him in the two episodes I got. I was going to say GS-8, because GS-8 was given a mission, and she accomplished that mission. Out of the rest of the droids, I don't know if you can say that about any of them. Toto spilled his master's credits out onto the Bespin skyline there. And then AZ-3, as awesome as he was and as willing as he was to make that... I take that back. He did make the sacrifice. He
kind of gets them
he saved Omega, but then I was thinking it's only because she goes back to rescue him that Crosshair has to make that choice. So,
but he did complete his mission. He even says that.
That whole scene was a bunch of like, I thought I could predict what was going to happen, and like nothing that I predicted happened.
True.
I was impressed with how much they actually been like, oh, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, because I thought they were very much setting it up for AZ3's sacrifice, and I kind of wanted it. Like I said, I kind of, not that I need to see a character die or anything like that, but it's just like a lot of times, you know, sacrifice makes it that much more poignant and that much more resonant. And
just God is trying to cover up a sinister. Right now. I want to watch Troy die. He's drowning.
lost to the depths. But it was a great moment for Crosshair, and nice showcasing of some of his less lethal arsenal there with the harpoon shot. And you still notice everybody in the Bad Batch had their rifles raised once they saw that he had his weapon lifted. Oh, they still don't trust him.
That made me so uncomfortable. I was like, oh my God, what is happening? Are you really going to shoot Hunter over wanting to rescue Omega?
They set it up perfectly. It's just like, this kid has been a thorn in our side. This kid is the reason you're making all these bad decisions. This kid is the reason our family's kind of broken up. Even though time and time again, she had these moments where she's like, I don't care what you've done. I don't care that you're constantly eschewing me and kicking me off to the side. Like, I'm going to stay behind. You're still my brother. Just like, you're their brother and they're my brothers. So, really, really, that's probably the strongest stuff in the finale for me is the relationship and the development between Omega and Crosshair.
And we have to talk about text line to Crosshair, because I could very much hear myself saying those words to somebody, but it's Crosshair is kind of griping at them after Omega just saved him, by the way, rude. And I think it's Echo that says something about Crosshair's demeanor, and Tech says Crosshair has always been severe and unyielding. It is his nature. He cannot change it, which I love the use of severe and unyielding. Yep. Like, I love that. And Crosshair thinks, oh, someone's on my side, and he questions Tech, and Tech says, I understand you. That does not mean I agree with you.
Yeah.
I love that line.
Ugh, so like, what an important line for kids to hear, for adults to hear, especially these days.
Definitely. And it's why Tech's the best.
That's going to be a poster. As soon as Displate makes something that has that text on it, I'm totally buying it.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
Other than that, I guess this episode kind of leaves on a cliffhanger. We do get, I guess it's worth mentioning the kind of the harrowing escape through the tubes and the tunnels underneath the water.
Yo, when Crosshair went trapped and the water was rising up and Omega was like constantly like going under trying to get him out, like that was powerful.
It was pretty intense.
While Wrecker and Hunter were trying to
pry open
the door.
Worried for them all at some point.
Yeah, I had flashbacks to Titanic.
Oh no. Yeah, but that's it though. But she was so determined in this episode. She showed so much grit. She never gave up. So I like that about Omega. She had a lot of growth.
Yeah.
I think she threw her weapon. I hope she actually like managed to get that back somewhere.
Oh, right.
So at one point she just chucks it to like get the thing off of Crosshair.
Hmm.
Well, she uses it to fire on the debris.
That's
on
true.
Top of
yeah,
them.
So she goes fire,
and then
throws
throw it away?
And then picks up the debris.
Hmm.
I can't remember.
So
I'm
hoping she like
to
picks it up off screen.
We can only hope. Otherwise, she's gonna have to find a even more badass weapon for season two. They get through the tunnel. We get the Star Wars tradition of getting these large aquatic underwater creatures, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think that might have been the creature that we saw in the Phantom Menace, that, you know, the exactly that we got
fish.
The one fish with its tongue wrapped around the the Bongo ship. I want to say it's called like a Bongo ship or whatever, but then the other one comes and grabs it, and Qui-Gon has that line, there's always a bigger fish. I think it was supposed to be the same creature. Okay.
I thought about it, but
I don't know.
I will rewatch The Phantom Menace.
I did think maybe turn your flashlights off, guys. I don't know.
I hated that that's what I thought, too. It's like, you guys are some of the best strategists in the world.
And they're like, oh, look at it. They're like shining lights on it. I'm like, it's not a zoo, you guys.
So you know what? That is the most disappointed I've been in Tech.
Okay.
You would think the genius would say, turn off your flashlights.
Yeah.
I mean, they all did it, to be fair.
Well, keep in mind, the girl that didn't know what dirt was, like, a few months ago is technically older than all of them. So we all have our gaps.
I do love that part. Technically, yes, she is older than us.
Yeah.
So cute.
Just a walking Siri.
Pretty much. Yeah. Okay, well, I guess other than that, I guess to put a little pin on this particular episode and where the season leaves off is that we do have the Bad Batch, you know, reunited with their ship. Do we have a name for the ship? I can't recall.
Marauder.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. The Havoc Marauder. They get reunited with the Havoc Marauder and take off, and they extend that invitation one last time to Crosshair, but he is very resolute in his stance and his ways, and that's kind of the last thing we see is the ship taking off and him left on this platform. I don't know what he's going to do.
It's very like, what's the Tom Hanks movie with the
volleyball? Oh, Castaway. Yeah, yeah. Wilson!
It was very Castaway. He's just like, I'm like, it's going to get sunburned, well, you guys.
There was a line where he said the scouts will be coming in.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But when? I don't know. It just made me laugh a little bit.
They were ready to shoot the structure down with him in it.
So yeah.
Like, oh, you're alive. He's
acting
we totally
so
came
petulant.
Back for you.
It's like, well, just leave him there. Right. Fine. Yeah. But a nice moment with Omega. You're still their brother, Crosshair. Mm-hmm. You're my brother, too. Mm-hmm. It's very sweet.
My younger brother.
Yeah.
We didn't really talk about it, but with the destruction of Kamino, it did really afford for some really breathtaking, I hate to say such destruction is beautiful, but it was in a way like that was kind of almost the most cinematic the series has been. There were a lot of times where, you know, we got those shots looking at the Star Destroyers and kind of panning with the camera, following the laser fire down to the cloning facility and like, yeah, there were times. Yeah.
And the smoke coming up was very real feeling.
Exactly.
Too.
Very.
I was so.
Yeah.
Dumb.
Yeah.
Like, I love What If so mm-hmm. far, but if they had copied the style in that, oh my God. Oh yeah. My. If they could mimic that level of detail that Bad Batch has had, Bad Batch has set a standard for me. I know it's a Disney budget, but. It's
an interesting point to bring up. What If is doing some interesting things, and I like the fact that they're going for such a unique animation style, and that's the thing we've said about it. It doesn't look like anything else, but it really is tough not to just appreciate the level of fidelity in a show like The Bad Batch. You know, the lighting, the particle effects, the textures, just the camera placement continually impresses and surprises me. Do you guys have any final thoughts in terms of the story that we were presented in these?
Well, we can't leave Nala Say alone. I mean, she's off at an Imperial cloning facility. And the doctor that takes her is wearing a similar outfit to the doctor in The Mandalorian.
Right.
I forget his name. So she's off to do things.
Cloning things.
Baby
Palpatine. Find out.
Yeah.
Baby Palpatines. She's going to make Rey's parents.
Snoke. Okay.
That episode when Omega was calling for help. And
I know
Finnick was like trying to talk to her, and she like unlocks the thing, and like one of the dead clones.
Oh yeah!
I was like,
then Finnick's hand is like,
yeah, nice gross out stuff there.
I'm gonna go back to ending it on my beautiful note. I love how much we've seen Kamino and how we have an understanding of Kamino being the rainy planet. There's always a storm going on. But what could arguably be the last time that we ever see Kamino, because the facility was blown up, was the only time that there was sunshine. There wasn't a storm at the end. I don't know if that was some sort of symbolism for like the optimism of what might come, that our hero survived, or that there's hope for them.
Hmm.
D- doing the things that they make them happy or be in the place that they want to be in. But I thought it was really beautiful that the last time that we see Kamino was, you know, after all this destruction and everything, was the only time that the sun shone.
I did not even pick up on that. You're right. Great, great catch. Beautiful. All right. Well, having covered the back half of the seasons in terms of the story, we've talked a lot about a lot of the characters, a lot of the standout moments. Before we move on to maybe expectations, I know we don't like to predict too much or speculate too much, but I think it's worth, you know, having a conversation talking about some of the things we want to see out of the announced second season. Did you guys have anything else, any final thoughts on the episodes we just talked about?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because during the rewatch, I was noting a theme of how many people told Hunter to join them in their cause. Rex asked him, Hera's parents asked him. Oh my God, who else asked? There was one, maybe two more.
Crosshair.
But no. There was a couple
people. Well, he does.
No, to join the rebellion. It's like, hey, like, you're...
I thought you meant to join their cause.
No, you're... It was like, your skills would be helpful to us. And they were just, and Hunter's response is always like, I'm here to take care of my team. I'm looking out for their best interest. If you need something, let me know. But it's like, I'm curious to see if he's going to be helping Rex out more, if he's going to be working with Wolf and what's his name?
Gregor.
If he's going to be working with Wolf and Gregor more.
Hmm.
And if we're going to see, like, I know we saw, like, the quote unquote, the birth of the rebellion in Rebels, but these earlier factions, maybe he'll work with Saw Gerrera a couple of times. I feel like the next season is going to be more focused on our primary team, and we'll see Crosshair here and there. I don't think it's going to be as much of like Empire overtake as much as it's going to be birth of rebellion.
Okay. I think you're right on the money in terms of like the story that we got kind of playing second fiddle to the Bad Batch themselves. I guess for me, one of the things I suggested, I can't remember at what point it was in the season. I kind of thought it was going to happen and it didn't happen, but if it could happen in the next season, I'd be pretty happy with it. But let's have Orson Krennic show up. You know, we got this guy, we got Admiral Rampart. Let's get somebody recognizable. And I love Rogue One, and Ben Mendelsohn did a great job being a kind of a sniveling Imperial. This seems like a perfect time period and opportunity to give Krennic a little more material.
I wouldn't mind seeing a couple Palpatine scenes.
Oh, sure.
I mean, like, as Darth Sidious, he showed up once in Rebels, he showed up once in Clone Wars, and did a fan, like, the one time each we saw him, he did a fantastic job, and I'd like to see that sinister attitude come up into the Bad Batch.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to see little Kanan again.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah.
He just runs away.
What if Kanan and Hera meet throughout Bad Batch?
I was just gonna say, what if we see Kanan and Hera? Right.
Yep. Get a little mini.
That's my only prediction.
Rebels Junior.
Predictions. Yeah. Yeah. Rebels prequel.
What about Boba Fett?
Oh,
we got the Book of Boba.
Yeah, I want to see Boba interact with Omega, whether it be within this show or within Book of Boba.
That'd be cool. What kind of interaction would you expect? Do you think it would be a friendly one, or
I feel like Omega would make it friendly and Boba would be like push off-ish about it. He's a bit just...
Well, yeah, like Boba's in prison at the end of the Clone Wars, isn't he? I think he's in prison.
No, he was on the run. I don't remember him being in prison, but it's also been a while.
I don't remember. He's in prison at one point as a kid. Jeez.
Is this just because of who...
He tried to kill Mace Windu. I mean,
that'll do it.
It's a whole thing.
He almost took out one of the Jedi cruisers on his own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just wanted to kill everybody on that ship and let Mace Windu die.
Yeah.
He needs to go to space therapy.
Yeah.
Instead, he goes to the Sarlacc.
Yeah, and I guess the only other real thing I guess I would expect to see is kind of what you alluded to there. With this season, the question was very much, what are the Bad Batch going to do? Are they going to be soldiers of fortune? You know, they hung out with Sid for a little while and did their thing. But I do think it is very much going to be them deciding how active a role do they want to play in this proto-rebellion. So I don't know how long I want the show to go on for. I guess I am in saying that I hope for a little more stakes in a second season, maybe some more lasting rippling. I keep, that's my like go-to phrase these days, rippling ramifications. Yeah.
Nice alliteration.
Yeah. Are you guys of a similar mind, or would you be happy with just give us unending seasons of Bad Batch? Let's see where they go indefinitely.
I wouldn't mind longer episodes. And
okay. I could concede with that. That'd be good. Because I really did love that premiere. That 75-minute premiere was so cinematic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want unending.
Well,
as long as it's good storytelling, sure. It could be as long as it wants, to be honest.
For sure. I guess part of the reason I say that too is because I do think it would like benefit from just like a 10-episode season rather than 16.
Yeah,
I agree.
I thought you meant
more invested.
I meant a little
episodes,
bit of both.
Please.
It was an open-ended question.
I would like to see it kind of get closer to the Rebels timeline.
Okay.
That would be
good. Would you be okay with like a significant time jump?
I like it with Justice.
Fair enough.
As long as you don't leave too many questions.
Sure.
Sure. Why not?
All right.
Right.
I wouldn't mind a 1 year time jump after this and seeing Omega a little more developed as a archer.
That'd be cool.
Or a strategist.
That'd be cool. Yeah. I think a year would be appropriate, not much more than that though. Yeah.
There's a 7 year gap between this and Rebels.
Is there? Okay.
It would be,
I was gonna say 7 years, seems short. Right?
It'd be probably not quite 19, but it's 19 from Revenge of the Sith to New Hope, correct? So it'd be maybe around 15.
I think years. Wikipedia uses BBY, which is before Battle of Yavin.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of that first episode of Rebels where they're like celebrating one of the anniversaries. But
Rebels is like 4 years before New Hope. Ish. Well, there's a larger time than 7 years.
A lot of ground to cover, regardless. A lot of ground to cover, a lot of time, pockets to explore within the Star Wars universe in this ever-changing galaxy. So, sounds like we've kind of got all our thoughts out there on this first season of Bad Batch, as well as these...
Oh, 14 years.
Oh,
sorry.
You're good.
14 years into the reign of the Galactic Empire and 5 years before a new...
Okay. There we go. Right on the money.
So they have... So Bad Batch has like 14 years worth of storytelling.
These are the things that stick in my head. And important things don't.
Yeah. While we're talking about the timeline, what kind of... How long do we think that this season took place over? What kind of... Was this a few months, a few weeks?
Well,
yeah,
they don't
really give us context.
There's a lot of episodes where they start and they're coming off of a mission for Sid, or they're going on a mission for Sid. So
yeah, that's
and
maybe like six months
sounds fair.
I feel like Crosshair needed some time for his face.
True, that is true.
Right.
Yeah.
And Hunter getting shot in the chest, like
yeah, that requires some recovery time for sure.
So maybe. Maybe a year is
perhaps.
Right.
What is time in the Star Wars universe anyway? It is like.
What is time but clock hands persevering?
What is time but missed minutes?
I don't know. Hey, y'all.
And now we're officially off the rails. So, unless you guys have any other thoughts you want to get out there before we close the book on Bad Batch, now's the time.
Just big thank you to Matthew Fox for including us on the weekly stuff.
Yeah.
Thank you for Jeff Randall for coming up on our first half, and thank you Haley Hobbs for coming on our back half.
Thank you.
Thanks all around. All right. And I guess on that note, I'll just plug some of the other things we have going on. We've talked a lot about What If. So please stay tuned to our weekly coverage of What If. We are actually going to have one Haley Hobbs appear on our episode 2 coverage. So very excited to get a double dose of Haley Hobbs on the feed this week. And I won't talk about it on this episode per se, but anybody that's been listening to the show for a while, there's a show that is near and dear to our heart, our bread and butter, if you will. We may have gotten an announcement in terms of when to expect the next season of that. And that's all I'll say about that. So stay tuned.
Haley's watching season 3 right now, too.
Good timing. So, yeah.
Oh, I'm done. Oh.
All right. On that note, there has never been a better time to keep tuning in. That's T-double-O. I'm terribly sorry. I did not even give Haley a chance to plug Spark. I talked about it at the beginning, but please.
Yeah, you can find myself and Brian V. Klein, BVK, on the Source Pages podcast, where we're covering comics and novels as primers for upcoming media. We're mostly focused on the MCU right now, since they're just churning out content like butter. But we are everywhere you can listen to a podcast. We have a Twitter, Instagram, Facebook page. Too many social things to manage. But we've been having a lot of fun. And we have an episode shelved right now on Rise of Kiyoshi with Zuhair that we're trying to get out in the next few weeks, cool. I think. But we're really looking forward to covering Shang-Chi soon. So we're recording that next week in anticipation of that September 3rd release. So check out the Source Pages podcast.
I have movie tickets. God, I love Gwyneth here.
Zuhair, anything you want to let the people know about?
I mean, now that you ask me, no idea.
Okay. Well, as I said, there's never been a better time to keep tuning in. That's T-double-O-N-I-N.
Stay whelmed.
Thank you for listening to the Animation Deliberation Podcast, a proud member of the Stranded Panda Network. If you would like to contact us, you can email animationdeliberationpodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter @animationdelib1. For this and other great shows, you can visit strandedpanda.com or join the great community that is the Stranded Panda Chat Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/SPChat. Tune in next time, and remember, stay whelmed.